and welcome to our series of podcasts for Equine Healthic 2024, all of which have been themed around the topic of equine well-being. We're spoiling you today with a double whammy of episodes as we tackle the tricky topic of healthy equine weight. Earlier today, we heard from equine nutritionist Ruth Bishop as she discussed nutrition side of weight management. Tune in if you missed that episode. You can find it on our website or all major podcast platforms, or, you know, where you found this one. And now it's time to delve deeper into the changes you can make to your management regime to not only help your horse lose weight, but to make it an enjoyable experience for the both of you. To get a better understanding of this, I'm joined by two experts in the field. First is Jan Rogers. She is the Director of Research and Policy at the Horse Trust. This role has her overseeing research grants and policy for the horse world, then looking at how best to share this new research and regulations to the equine industry. Welcome, Jan.
Good morning.
And I'm also joined by Tamsin Furtado, who is a behavioural scientist from the University of Liverpool, who has worked closely with the Horse Trust and the Showing Council on projects around understanding equine obesity and educating horse owners. Welcome, Tamsin.
Hi, Rachel. Thanks for having us.
Lovely to have you here. So I'm going to start with my first question, which is the one I've been asking most of the contributors who've been coming onto this podcast this week. What does equine well-being mean to you? Because that's been our topic.
Oh, who's going to start?
You start there, Jack. You can start. My question.
That's a great one to start with. What does it mean? I mean, there's so much you can talk about here, but probably it's looking at what the five domains model tries to encapsulate. So as a welfare assessment model, it's looking at all of those aspects of horse care, from nutrition through to the importance of their environment, their health, making sure they're free from disease and taking into account their behavioural needs. But more importantly, and increasingly people are aware of this, is the importance of positive experiences and the mental state. And taking all of those things and wrapping them together, I think, is making sure we get that right. I think super important.
Fabulous. What about you, Tamsin?
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think the thing that's really important to me thinking about well-being and kind of living a good life is that idea of positive well-being and giving horses the opportunity to actually enjoy the things they're doing. I think in all the research that we do, we often talk a lot about the compromises that we all know we have to make in a domesticated environment, and that our horses maybe aren't living the life that they might like to live in certain ways, whether that's, you know, having a really stable group of friends or being able to just choose what they do all day and eat all day. Which is obviously very topical for what we're talking about today, but trying to make those in as evidence-based a way as possible, and kind of maximising the opportunities for them to have to, you know, really enjoy their life and have positive experience, I think is really important to me.
So to be able to have scratchies and roll and have zoomies and things like that and just be
have fun.
Exactly, it's horses being horses, really, isn't it? So let's dive then into weight. As I'm sure anyone who's listening who's had to put a horse on a weight loss diet knows, there can be some barriers, you know, that make it a bit difficult. You know, if we had a free, perfect world, it would be really easy. We could do whatever we like, but that's not always the case. What are some of the common barriers then for people who are looking to help their horse lose weight?
Like, shall I dive in there first?
Yeah, because this was your PhD, wasn't it, Tamsin? You've looked at this in some depth.
I have spent a lot of time thinking about fat ponies in the last 8 to 10 years, including owning some as well, I would say. So in a totally non-judgmental way. So I think, there's so much you can say to this question, ranging from the kind of theoretical things to the practical things. I think one of the things that's really important from the kind of more theoretical side, I studied human psychology and sociology and so on. And I think what's really interesting is, I often, if I'm doing a presentation about this, we'll show, we've got all those kind of memes that go around Facebook, like you've probably seen the one about with a really fat Shetland pony that says, my farrier said I was fat, so I ate him. And there's loads of different memes about fat horses and fat dogs and things. And then I think that's really interesting, actually, when we look at, you know, why is it so hard? Why do we have this population of really overweight horses and it's so hard to do something about them? It's so interesting to think about that, because we would never, ever have jokes or memes and things about underweight horses. And we just don't see that as funny. And if we have an animal that's underweight, we'll, you know, often be stressing getting the nutritionist in, getting a vet in, and you know, everybody's really worrying about that horse. But when the horse is overweight, even if, you know, even for someone like myself who studies this stuff day in, day out. You know, we often kind of also kind of make jokes around that, kind of lighten it, and we don't treat it with the same kind of severity. So I think there's a really interesting kind of conceptual layer there that goes beyond the, you know, the difficulties in like day-to-day management. I think there's also, we know there's big problems with people recognising weight and getting confused about, you know, the shape their horse is meant to be. And on that, I've got a rescue pony who's a real kind of, yeah, he's a pony, eats, you know, lives off fresh air. And I think it's really interesting. Like, I often think every spring when I'm starting to think, right, you know, he drops a lot of weight over winter. Great. Then he piles it on in spring. But knowing which day is it that they're, oh, right, I'm going to do something today is often a really big issue for people, because it's not usually something where, you know, it's like, OK, today they're so much fatter. Right. Today is the day that I need to implement things. So it's very easy to put weight management off. So often, you know, we can talk all day about things like livery yard setups and time exercising and so on. But I think kind of thinking on that kind of broader level of like, well, actually, what is the point where we intervene and like, how do we feel about it is really important. So we do a lot of work around trying to make people feel more positive about weight management and so on. So it's fun and it's not just something horrible that you have to implement on a day where you think, oh, rubbish, God, now I've got to like soak all this hay and find all this extra time and so on. So, yes, those are my thoughts. Jan, what would you add to that?
Yeah, there are, aren't there, a number of challenges. And I think one of them is probably the habits that we get into as well, surrounding the way we care for our horses. And a lot of that will be down to the amount of time we have available. So habits are sort of shortcuts to save time, to fit busy horse care into trying to get to work or kids or whatever else everyone has to do in their world. So yeah, some of the habits that we've formed that we don't necessarily always have the opportunity to sit back and look at. Whereas if we were to possibly change one or two of them, it could have knock-on effects. And there's quite a lot of behavioural science behind that, isn't there, Tamsin? A number of excellent researchers have used as tools to help people modify their behaviours and bring about those positive changes just in small ways.
So the thing is, it's such a slippery slope, isn't it? Because it's, you know, we see our horses every single day, and it's so hard to spot, as you say, when that weight is, you know, is going on and getting added to. And I have, you know, in my personal experience, you know, I've got a horse as well who's a very good doer, and it's always when I've gone away, say I've gone away on holiday for a week, or I've work have sent me off somewhere, and then I come back and I take a look at her and go, oh crikey, actually, yeah, you're looking a little bit rounder than I'd like right now. And it's that, it's, you know, it's getting that fresh perspective, and that's suddenly what you go, oh actually, yeah, no, I really need to do something about this.
Yeah, absolutely. And to kind of back up what Jan was saying about habits there, I think what's really interesting, if we all think about what we do when we go to the yard. So what was your dream when you got your horse, and what do you do when you go to the yard? And often the dream is like, right, I'm going to go on beach rides, I'm going to take my horse on holiday with me, and I'm going to have this lovely relationship and blah blah. And what do you do every day when you go to the yard? You have your habits and your routines, which are basically around work. And sometimes, you know, like anyone, you know, I'll get stuck into mucking out the field shelter and doing the hay nets and so on, and I'm like, God, am I actually looked at, like, really just taking time to breathe and look at the horse, and how much of the stuff that I enjoy, the dreams about doing XYZ and all the activities and stuff, am I doing, rather than just getting into like, right, first I do this, then I do this, then I do this. So actually we don't always match up kind of what we want from our horses with, which is often the activity based, the fun stuff and what we really love. We get kind of bogged down in those routines and habits, and, you know, thinking about the details, like, which are important, don't get me wrong, but, you know, thinking about, you know, is the bed straight, or you know, exactly what amount of hay am I feeding or whatever. And I think if we kind of just remember that and kind of turn it on its head, we can often think about the more fun side. So I think that's really important.
Yeah, so hold on to those dreams, really, isn't it? And then take that fresh look. And I think what Rachel said was so interesting about when you've gone away and you've taken a few days to do something different, to have some different habits, whether you've been on holiday, where you come back, you have a fresh look. And it's a way of sort of bringing about that fresh look without having to have the week away, making sure you keep on top of that.
Yeah, and I guess as well, this time of year is also, it's particularly hard, like you were saying, Tamsin, there about times, because, you know, it's dark. Let's face it, at the moment I see the horse in the dark in the morning, and it's dark in the evening, and it's half the time it's raining, and it's so, you know, it's so hard when you're on such a limited time, because you've only got a tiny window of daylight before, you know, you either have to go to work in the morning, or you have to, you know, it gets dark in the evening, you've got to go back and have your tea or whatever. But actually winter can be quite a good time to bring in some of this management side of weight loss, isn't that right?
Yeah, absolutely. So winters, we're just so lucky as horse owners. So I also study obesity in other animals as well. And as horse owners, we're so lucky because this doesn't work with dogs and cats, but with horses, they can keep themselves warm. And I'm sure you guys know that horses feel cold very differently to us, because they in their digestive systems, they can actually create warmth. So if, for anyone listening who's not kind of familiar with that idea, basically what's happening inside a horse is the same as when, you know, when you cut your lawn, and then if you put your hand in the grass cuttings, it's warm because it's partially starting to ferment, happens very, very quickly. That's essentially what's happening to some extent in the horse's digestive systems. They can actually internally heat themselves up and use their energy to do that in a way that we can't so much, although I do sometimes wonder, because I do definitely feel like I want more Mars bars when I'm at the yard. Cold, it
I'm
makes
with you
feel
there,
like
yeah.
You want to eat to warm yourselves up. Mm. Anyway, but horses can genuinely do this. So as a result, that's why, you know, we've got all this talk about over-rugging and so on, because actually what we should be doing is letting our horses use their own energy to warm themselves up, and that's such a good way of burning some extra calories. So our the rescue pony Bertie, who I mentioned earlier, he never wears a rug. Our horses aren't stabled; they have a field shelter. He just has extra hay when it's cold, and if he was too overweight, I would also consider giving him a bib clip, so he'd have to use a bit of extra energy. And that's just so helpful in allowing him to drop weight. And really, what we want them to be like is, if we think about those, if we think about what wild ponies would look like at the end of the winter, you know, often they'll really will be able to see their ribs. And obviously, we don't want to see our domestic horses' ribs to a huge extent, but we do want to be able to definitely see a shadow of their ribs, because what that's doing is resetting their metabolic system to prepare them for the fact that in spring there is going to be all this grass. So if we should really be endeavouring to allow them to drop a little bit below ideal at that point, to allow them to build up again, because that's what's healthy for them. But also it's quite uncomfortable for us, and people get very worried as soon as they see an outline of ribs, feel sorry for them, and want to give them more hay. So
yeah, well, I was going to back up exactly everything Tamsin had said. It's a natural reset, so that seasonality aspect is super important and there to be taken advantage of. And it feels a bit uncomfortable to us because it isn't something we like to see horses. We don't like to see horses without rugs. Potentially even shivering isn't terribly harmful, unless it's to a great extent. And all of those things are perfectly natural ways that horses thermoregulate and manage their own energy consumption and their own body weight. And it isn't something we should worry as much about as we possibly do.
Yeah, well, I guess it kind of comes back to your earlier point there about our habits and our thinking. Mm-hmm. And you know, because it can be just a habit. Oh right, I'm cold, the weather's a bit rubbish. Mm-hmm. I'm going to sling a rug on a horse and chuck him out in the field. And as you say, it's that sort of taking a step back sometimes and thinking about the things that we're doing and whether we're doing it because that's what the horse needs or because that's just what's become mm-hmm. the habit.
Yeah. If it's a fully grown adult horse and perfectly well, there wouldn't necessarily be any harm in doing exactly as Tamsin suggests, in reducing the thickness of the rug or taking the rug off, adding a clip and all of those things, which will help nature take its course.
Yeah. One thing, if people feel worried about doing this, one thing we often suggest is just going down one rug. So say you normally rug your horse with a 250 weight, you know, medium weight rug, just go down a level, 100 grams or whatever, and see how the horse is coping. Obviously, we're not suggesting people leave their horses, especially if they're older or, you know, have an issue or anything, in any sort of compromised state. But often, you know, I remember when I used to have a thoroughbred and she used to have like four or five rugs on in the field. And then I gradually began reducing them down and I was like, oh my gosh, she's so much happier and she can move so much more freely, and she's definitely not any colder wearing just one heavyweight rug, and she did not need the fleece and the stable rug underneath and the lightweight and so on. But we can, you know, we want them to, we owe them because we love them, we want them to feel good, so often we go a bit too far with that. So just thinking about, can we reduce it even a little bit?
I guess that's the thing, all of this, a lot of this is coming from love at the end of the day.
Absolutely.
And projecting our human feelings and the fact that we're a bit chilly, so we've got our thick down on or whatever, isn't necessarily the same for the horse. And it's sort of renormalizing that, I think.
So what are maybe some of the other things within a management regime that you could look to tweak or to change to help with that weight loss then?
Tamsin's got a booklet, haven't you, on that?
I have got a booklet, yes. We can share that with the podcast with link if you like. But so in my PhD, one of the things we did was to collect data from lots of horse owners across lots of different you know, forum data, interviews and so on, to look at the whole range of things that people were doing. And obviously there are some things we all think of straight away to manage weight, which might be, you know, riding a horse more or soaking their hay or, you know, reassessing their bucket feed. But there's also lots of things that we maybe don't think of that can be really helpful. So, you know, if it's appropriate for the individual horse, maybe turning them out with really playful horses, for example, like youngsters can really work sometimes. Things like riding and leading, things like taking up a new sport with your horse, like horse agility. I go running with my pony. He's doing couch to 5K when he needs to lose some weight. You know, there are some quite kind of some more surprising things, more creative things people are doing, which can be really helpful. And there's no, the important thing about that was that there's no magic bullet. You know, there's no one thing where we can say, right, everyone should have a grazing muzzle and that's the answer, or everybody should have a track system, that's the answer, because every situation is so unique. So by providing those in a kind of, what we've done is like, created a format in the booklet that's like, what can you change in your environment which will suit you and your horse? You can create like a tailored strategy that will work for you rather than it being sort of one size fits all, which we know is frustrating for people.
Yeah, I guess that's the thing, is that it's, I mean, and that's been a common theme across all the content that we've got going out this week, is our horses are individuals and what works for one won't necessarily work for another. So I guess it's just a matter of trial and error and looking at the resources you have available, working with your yard manager if you're on a livery yard, and finding the strategies that work for that horse and for the owners as well, I guess, because it's, you know, it's got to work for everyone.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely.
I think there's room for innovation there as well. And Tamsin's a social scientist, and we all know the power of doing things with friends. So if you can get little groups of people together to do different things and make it a little bit competitive and keep those communications up and compare and contrast what you're finding, and also potentially tie it into what you're doing as a person. So if you've got a limited amount of time, Tamsin mentioned couch to 5K with her pony that you're doing. And I've done that in the past myself, as have others who are training for maybe half marathons or marathons, is actually to run with your horse, because that's an option. If you haven't got time to run yourself and ride your horse, you could combine the two. I mean, obviously make sure you're not on busy roads and you've got all your high vis and so on and so forth, but that those innovations. And Rachel, when we spoke to you the other morning, you've been long lining your horse, which is great, because you can get out, you're walking too, your horse is getting the stimulation of being out and about. And there are many different ways of not only increasing thermoregulation or reducing the food or changing the diet a horse has, but adding a little bit more exercise to that and bringing a social dynamic to it. I think there's quite a lot of power in those changes.
Yeah, 100%. Talking about dreams, I do actually have a dream for Bertie to run a marathon with me, because he really likes going out. And it's so interesting watching him, you know, experiencing the environment. And for anyone who doesn't take their horses on those kind of in-hand walks or anything, or long reining, it's actually, you get such a different perspective on being with them compared to riding. And obviously not every horse is, you know, necessarily going to be ideal to do that with. We've got a very excitable Arab, for example, where I think taking him on long walks would, you know, he's quite big and quite excitable. You know, yeah, I feel like it's just easier to be on top. But depending on the horse, again, you know, very individual. But, you know, thinking about kind of different ways, it can be so rewarding. I absolutely love taking the horses out in hand generally now. So
I completely agree. Like mine, as you say, we, you know, she'd been long reining that morning. That's pretty much her favourite form of exercise. She'd quite happy never be ridden again. She'd just want me to long rein her everywhere. But as you say, it is. It's a very different, by sort of, and again, mix and matching the forms of exercise you're doing and doing lots of different things with your horses, it does bring in that different perspective. You know, walking them on the ground or long run or whatever, you know, you can watch how they're moving while they're exercising, which obviously you can't do while you're in the saddle. And obviously when you're in the saddle, it's a different experience to being on the floor. And it's like, you know, it's that variety is the spice of life, I guess.
It absolutely is. It absolutely is. And Tamsin, I'm desperate. And when you get Bertie in his lycra and give him his timing chip, he'll probably be quite competitive.
Yeah, I think he will be, to be fair. He's quite keen. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, there we go. Next time Horse Trust needs to do some fundraising, we know who to go to.
All right. It's a deal. I feel like this is a thing now. But sort of on this, while we're talking about this, I think one of the people often say, about weight management and, you know, getting stuck on it. And I think it's quite useful to think about the fact that when we get stuck around soaking hay and like, oh, well, I can't reduce my bucket feed anymore. And like, oh, what can I do? To think that actually, if you sort of turn it on its head, technically you could do a whole weight management through just exercise, through just increased exercise. So I used to have a Welsh cob, for example, who I started competing at endurance purely because he was overweight and I didn't really have a good way of managing his, I wasn't allowed to change his fuels around, for example. And so we started at a lower level and it did take a while for the weight to come off. But actually when he was competing at a reasonable level, that was enough to manage his weight and meant that I didn't have to use muzzles, which he would have hated. And he also didn't particularly like being stable, blah, blah, you know, all of these things that are individual to the horse. So actually, and, you know, the endurance was really fun and it's become my thing. So, you know, actually, obviously not every horse can be exercised by any means, but sometimes we can just think about, like, rather than getting bogged down in the detail of like, right, should I soak my hay for 5 hours, 1 hour or 8 hours? Like, actually, what can we be doing instead? You know, can we be increasing their lives rather than decreasing their lives? Kind of.
Yeah. And I think you touched on quite an important point there. The fact that, you know, sometimes it can be a bit overwhelming, all this weight loss. Because there's a lot of information being thrown at you. There's a lot of factors to consider. What would be your advice then for people who maybe are feeling a bit overwhelmed?
Do you want to go, Jan? I'm yakking away.
Yeah, I think choose a combination. Maybe if you can change one or two things, that would be a really good place to start. Because as you say, Rachel, there's a plethora of information out there. And all of the charities provide really good information about what you can do to manage your horse's weight. And it can be quite daunting. But maybe once you've had a read and assimilated what's there, is choose maybe just two things that you could do. And out of that, that links back to the habits thing we were talking about. If you can change one or two habits, then the branch lines that the sort of knock on from as an effect from changing those one or two things can make it fall into place for you. So however restrictive the environment you are in, or the ways in which you are permitted to keep your horses, the time available to exercise, you could choose a combination of those things that would suit you. But have a look at just breaking it down to one or two things that you feel you can do. Tamsin, what do you think as a social scientist?
I totally agree with that. But I would say also, if you can, do it with a friend. So find a friend who you really trust, condition score each other's horses because they can help you keep an eye on your horse, and then sit down together, have a beer or a coffee or whatever it is you like, and chat about how you like each make a plan. You can help each other problem solve, because sometimes it's so much easier for someone else to see something you could be doing that you haven't thought of. But also you can help each other. Right, we're going to check in every month, we're going to weigh out, we're going to do a weigh tape every month, and you know, this is our plan, or we're going to check in every 3 months or whatever and see how we're getting on. So in an ideal world, sit down with your friends and have like a, it's called having an accountability buddy, but it could just be, I think just buddy sounds a bit friendlier. But ideally also some sort of diary, which can literally just be like a note in your iPhone or something where you keep a track of things. So keep a track of what did you change, and then how's the horse's weight doing, so you can see if it's making a difference and you can remember. Because so, we change so much with our horses all the time, don't we? Like, oh, I'm trying that new feed, oh, like here's my new saddle, blah blah blah. And actually just writing those down can really help us like process a bit more what's working and what isn't working. So yeah, write it down and get you know, work with a friend or someone on your yard, or you know, someone you trust, could be a partner, you know, someone who's got that like a little bit of an outside view with your horse, who can help you.
Yeah, and visuals are Rachel, I was going to say, visuals are really important, aren't they, as well? If you record these things, you know, with your camera, and then you can look at them in sequence, and, you know, you can make all sorts of arrays of them now. In fact, your phone presents them to you, whether you want them or not. And you can then start to look at those changes and go, my goodness me, I have made a difference.
Yeah, definitely. Photos all the time. I always, whenever the horses are looking a bit podgy, I don't want to take photos of them, because I'm like, oh, no, I'm supposed to be a fat horse researcher, I can't have that. But actually it's so helpful then when you look at them in combination and you're like, wow, look how far I've come. Even if it's, you know, even if it's just your first month of changes and it's only a little bit, being able to see that gives you that feeling of like positive reinforcement, and you're like, wow, I'm getting somewhere, I can do this. And kind of, you know, we need positive experience just like our horses do, so that can really help.
Yeah, we are human. If we can do that and then show other people what we've done, then they'll be inspired by our story. That's also quite a powerful thing as well.
Yeah, definitely. That sharing of experiences with each other is the way to go. And, you know, because and so many yards have multiple fat horses on them these days. It's a sad fact that we're in. So that, you know, the odds are there's going to be someone there who you can team up with on this and make it into a, as you say, a positive buddy experience. And I guess that photos thing as well, that's kind of, it's almost the reverse of what I was saying at the start, you know, where you get that fresh eyes and you go away and come back and think, oh, God, my horse has put some weight on. It's, I guess it's the opposite. It's that, it's that mark in the sand of, oh, look, there we go, and we've categorically shifted from this to this.
Yeah, absolutely. That's true.
And of course, as well, the other important thing is to work with the professionals around you as well, but, you know, particularly if your horse is at the very obese end of the scale or is at risk of a you know, health crisis going on with that, is to work with your vet, work with the practitioners around you. And, you know, physios can give you some great exercises and pole work and things like that you can do with your horses, build that muscle, build that fitness. And, you know, as you say, bring them into the team around you and make them part of that mission that you've got going.
Yeah, absolutely. One habit that we have tried to encourage people to get into is just to ask every single, even if you're not worried about your horse's weight, ask every professional when they come to the yard, your farrier, your instructor, blah, blah, how do you think he's looking today or she's looking? Because they can often help you spot changes that you can't see yourself. And if you just get into the habit of doing it, then that's really helpful. But also vets and instructors, all these people often find it really difficult to bring up. If they do think the horse is overweight, it's very awkward for them and they're often worried that people are going to take it the wrong way. So they find it very difficult to talk about. So we found that owners were saying, oh, well, the vet didn't say the horse was overweight, so they must be fine. Whereas the vet was like, oh, the horse was really overweight, but I was in a rush and I thought that owner, you know, seems a bit also in a rush, or, you know, I just didn't, like, couldn't say it in that instance. I was there for another reason. So ask the professional every time and kind of getting in the habit of that. And, you know, we should say, Jan and I have mentioned lots of changes today and lots of, you know, fun things, obviously. All changes should always be introduced gradually, and, you know, definitely don't go and take your horse on a beach ride tomorrow if you haven't ridden in 6 months and that kind of thing, you know. But it's the nice thing about having goals in the long term is that then you can kind of work towards them and you get that reward over time for having worked for it. So totally advocate, as you said, working with nutritionists, vets, physios, your instructor, all of those people, because, you know, they can be your backup team and they'll enjoy doing it as well.
Definitely. Well, one of the things that, again, we mentioned a little bit at the start, but, you know, if we're talking about this sort of promoting positive, healthy horse weight, is the work that you've been doing with the Showing Council. And do you want to tell me a little bit more about that?
Well, yeah, that's been a really great experience. So the Showing Council is the umbrella body for showing organisations, of which there are many, and they've been really receptive to working with us. So it started off as bringing on board a few shows, really, in a pilot year in 2019, where we gave out some very attractive large green and gold rosettes to horses that had the healthiest body condition in any particular class that was selected. And so they weren't evaluated by the judges. The judges judged the class according to the criteria, and suitably qualified person, be that a nutritionist or a vet or a vet nurse, body condition scored the horse and awarded the ribbon to the one that had the healthiest body weight. That proved to be really effective because it's all that positive endorphin stuff, and people were very, very chuffed with their large rosettes and said how much they valued them. So as a pilot, we then expanded that out to more and more shows, and they've increasingly come on board and really sort of grasped hold of it. And now we're at the Great Yorkshire Show, the Royal Cornwall Show, the Royal Windsor Show, and they've been super good at embracing this and enabling us to work with professionals to give people these lovely big rosettes to recognise the efforts they've made to keep their horses in a healthy body condition in the showing environment, which is perceived to have challenges with equine weight. They're not the only environment and no one's singling them out for special treatment, but it's the area we started in, and it's landed really well, hasn't it? Tamsin, you've done some body condition scoring in the ring, haven't you?
Yes, I have. It's a really nice thing to do, actually, because it's kind of challenging. The idea is to kind of recalibrate people's ideas around what a healthy horse looks like, because we all see so many overweight horses all the time. You know, we've got documented evidence that people find it really hard to, everybody thinks that they can condition score kind of by eye because we're used to seeing horses, but actually in reality, there's so much that's confusing, you know. So native ponies that don't have any withers because they're a barrel shape, that's not healthy, but we see it all the time. And crests on, you know, a horse that was gelded a bit late, well, what is that crest? At what point should we worry about it? And so on. So, it's really helpful for that. And it's great talking to competitors and the judges. What's really interesting is that, a bit like what I said about vets and owners before, we've got a bit of a vicious circle. So often the judges are blamed for, you know, having this situation with so many overweight horses. But the judges will all say to you, I really don't like seeing overweight horses in the ring. That's not what I want. But a lot of the horses in the ring might be overweight because that's the population of horses we've got. So, you know, am I supposed to eliminate them all? Then I'll be very unpopular and, you know, might not be invited back to the show. And, you know, what if the best horse in all other ways is overweight? Then I'm, you know, what do I do then? Should I still eliminate them? So they've got a whole load of kind of pressures on them, which make it very difficult for them. And they, you know, they all say that's not what we want to see. We don't want to see unfit horses. We don't want to see fat horses. Whereas the competitors often feel like, oh, well, the best people are the people with the, you know, the best horses being highest placed are the ones with the overweight horses. So we'll make our horses more overweight. So you've got a bit of a people that, you know, two sides not really understanding each other very well there. But what we're finding is that now a lot of really good sign. Is that A, the weights are decreasing, we've got evidence of that, but B, often the producers who are, obviously the professional producers are the ones chasing, you know, what they know exactly what the judges want because that's their actual job. And they're often the ones now winning our healthiest body condition awards because they know that that's what the judges want. So often if we look at the producers' horses, then they're actually very nicely muscled and nice and fit, which is not at all what I would have expected when I came into this. You know, first I would have thought that they had more overweight horses, but it just shows my naivety and it's a really nice thing to see.
Yeah, definitely. Because as you say, that's where a lot of the, you know, people think fat horses and showing are very closely linked, but it's nice that you've been able to prove that actually that isn't always the case. No. And I think the thing that you picked up there that was really important was that idea of recalibration. Because, you know, as we've said, there are, you know, obesity in horses is a massive problem and it's becoming more and more commonplace to see a horse that's carrying too much weight as opposed to the right amount. So, yeah. You know, we become a bit blind to it in the same way we become blind to our own horses maybe gaining a bit of weight. That becomes a society industry-wide problem because, you know, that if that's what we're used to seeing, then we're not shocked when we do see it, I guess. So if we can all kind of take up the challenge, eventually hopefully we'll all, you know, that norm will shift in the right direction, I guess, is what I'm trying to get at.
Well, I think if we all do the same thing. So I'm just reminded of watching a live stream of the trot up at badminton and seeing when people can comment and the comments sort of fly up and people go, a lot of people I saw saying these horses are too thin, which I found absolutely fascinating. But the point Tamsin was making about recalibration is that those horses are super fit for the purpose, for the event they're competing in. But people who aren't in that environment all the time are seeing them as having lower body condition than they would like to see. So that recalibration thing, I think, is super important that those horses are fit for the role that they're undertaking. But we're so used to seeing them looking larger. And that's, you know, I think, really quite telling.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. It's always so interesting when you do condition scoring with people, because all of us, and I absolutely would have been the same before I learned more about this sort of thing. You know, we think we know what we're looking at and we kind of eyeball the horse as a whole. But actually, when you even really experienced people here, you know, when you then go through in a bit more detail, like what are the actual components of the horse and what's underneath the skin here? What, you know, a crest is a really interesting example because people often say, oh, well, that's just how she is that or he is or whatever. But actually there is, and you know, oh, it's a muscly neck, but above the nuchal ligament, when people learn how to find it, it's not possible for there to be anything above that except fat, because there is no muscle that can build there. So when a horse has a crest that rises above the nuchal ligament, that all that can be is a kind of pillow of fatty tissue. So often when we go into a bit more depth, then it can be really eye-opening for people, and you know, certainly that was a journey for myself as well, that you kind of learn to see what's under the skin a bit more that we wouldn't necessarily have known, even if we think we know. So
yeah, no, I think apple-shaped bottoms are another one. And you quite often hear people say, oh, it's because they're a cob, they're supposed to look like that.
Yeah.
You know, actually, when you then go and prod it, you realise it's actually spongy and it's not supposed to be there. It's fat. And it's just that way that we've trained ourselves, I guess, to think in a way that actually doesn't always have our horse's best well-being at heart.
Yeah, absolutely. And the confusing thing about horses, which is different to dogs and cats, is that horses do put on fat in places where we want them to have muscle. So, you know, they put on fat on their apple bum, they put on fat over the top line, and they put on fat on their neck where, you know, it looks very nice. It looks just like a muscly dressage horse, unless you know the difference. Whereas, you know, a dog and cat is quite different, or, you know, we're quite different as well as humans. So it makes it really hard for people because, yeah, that like an apple bum can absolutely just be muscle, but your horse would, you know, a cob has to work really, really quite hard to build that really nice muscly apple bum. So it sort of depends what you're doing with your horse as well. And the same with, you know, I've got two really nice pictures of two stallions. One's an advanced level dressage horse who's working really hard, and one's a show Welsh cob, and they've both got cresty necks, but you can actually see the difference in those. But you know, a horse is not going to develop a muscly crest appearance on their neck unless they're working really, really quite hard. Just like us, you know, we have to go to the gym to build the muscle. They have to work hard, and that's going to be more than, you know, your 45 minutes a day that most of us do with our horses. So, you know, I think when people get confused, often just even thinking about how fit is my horse can actually be quite a good indicator of like, well, is it likely to be muscle or is it likely to be a bit of extra pods there?
So, well, we've had a really interesting conversation here. We've thrown a lot of ideas around. But if you had to pick, what would be your one take-home message for people listening?
Okay, I would say think about what you want to do. When you bought your horse or you obtained your horse, what was the thing, what was kind of your dream? So that might be having a lovely relationship with them, might be doing beach rides, holidays, you know, competing, whatever. And then think about what you actually do with your horse and how you can recalibrate, because often, you know, we all get really bogged down. And what's the fun stuff that you can do there? And then think about how you can fit weight loss into that, because if you're enjoying any weight loss stuff, because, you know, what you like is building a track system, or what you like is, you know, I don't know, a horse agility, whatever it is, doesn't matter what it is, if you can enjoy those things, then you and your horse are much more likely to be able to maintain them over the long time, in comparison with, you know, if you're really worried about being hungry and you're soaking hay all the time and so on. So, you know, absolutely also soak hay if you need to, but, you know, try and focus on the good things if you can, and how you can make it fun and work with a friend. What about you, Jan?
So I've got a question for people who might be listening in, is what can we do for you? Because, you know, Tamsin, we're working with the National Equine Welfare Council to produce a load of resources that people can use to help combine all of these weight loss initiatives that we're talking about. So the idea is we've created them and we're giving them to experts to review, and we hope to produce them in very easy to assimilate formats. So what I'd like to understand, and maybe they could listeners could get back to you, Rachel, or to National Equine Welfare Council or Horse Trust, and let us know what can we do for you, what can we help give you that would give you those two things that you could choose that might make a difference. How would we present it to you? What would you like to get from us? What's the hardest thing for you? Do you know how to body condition score, or can someone help you learn to do that better? What might you want? Point one, and what two things might you do to kick off that positive change yourself?
There we go, folks. There's your challenge, your homework. If you've got anything you want to add on that to Jan's point, if you're listening to this, if you found this through social media, then put a comment in, or you can drop an email to media@bef.co.uk and we can make sure that's passed on. Did you have anything else you wanted to add to that, Jan?
No, really. Thanks very much for the opportunity to chat, and wish you all the best with your health week.
Brilliant. Thank you very much. And thank you, Tamsin, as well, for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me. It was great to chat.
And I hope everyone listening, you've had a really enjoyable time. This has sparked some ideas in your head, you know, for what you could do for your horses. You've got something to take away from this. There's been plenty of other resources, assets and things that have gone out, well, certainly today around the subject of weight, and obviously across the rest of the week on lots of other very interesting topics. So make sure you head to our website where everything is collated, or scroll back through social media, or, you know, if you want to listen to some of the other podcasts from this week, just, well, look wherever you found this one, to be honest. We will also, I think, we'll make sure the link gets shared for Tamsin's booklet as well, because that is packed with lots of really great practical steps you can take in your management regime to help your horse lose weight. So thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you all soon.